Tired of profit wipeouts and blown accounts from following trade signal groups and other YouTube channels? Looking for a better way to trade, reduce your stress, and minimize your risk? Become a skilled technical analyst and see the charts and markets in a new light using the successfully proven HVF method by Francis Hunt, while being surrounded and supported by a principled, structured, and experienced community. Enjoy a constructive learning environment while practically trading markets, supported by a bespoke platform run through browser and app, specifically designed to teach and engage you whilst learning and growing as the markets move. This is not a Telegram or Slack signal group. All trade ideas are based on a proprietary technical analysis process honed over decades, which is the HVF method, leading to trade ideas with fast-moving breakouts and tight stops, exact entries and exits, nuanced interim considerations, and ultimately, strong rewards. Submissions are graded and scored by Francis for potential high-quality setups, and we provide bespoke tools to help get the job done properly and with precision. Over time and with focused effort, you'll begin to look at charts and price action just like Francis. Community updates every day by Francis and our three webinars a week provide a 360-degree approach, which are presented by our experienced team of trade leaders to spot potential trades. We're a community of self-actualized individuals, spanning the globe and active 24/7, 365. The premium community provides a warm, supportive, and cooperative place for people willing to listen, participate, contribute, and to learn. We've changed thousands of traders' lives. Transform your approach to trading now. Transform your life. Book an introductory call with us on the link below.
Hey, everybody. Really delighted to have Peter Grandicher with me, a veteran of 40 years on Wall Street. He had a very interesting career path. I'll let him tell us a little bit about that. First of all, Peter, welcome onto our show.
Good to be with you.
And maybe just for those that don't yet know who you are, just a quick overview of your interesting journey and how it's got you to where you are.
About 40 years and 60 seconds or less. So without any formal education, I became a stockbroker back in 1984. I would be elevated quickly to be head of investment strategy for a firm, and I would make a forecast of a crash, which we celebrated 37 years ago yesterday. And then the day after the crash, I said in 2 years we'll go back up higher, and I got coined the Wall Street Whiz Kid. I would manage mutual funds, some hedge funds, and then I would get in the corporate consulting side of the business, mostly in metals and mining. And then in the year 2000, I got involved with servicing professional athletes and having a firm that dealt with them, as well as be involved in Christian sports ministry here, primarily with New York-based professional teams. And I've continued to speak about metals and mining more than anything else. Even though it's not sole business, I still involved in a alternative to traditional financial planning group here in New Jersey just for U.S. residents. My days in the sports is over because how it became politically sized and socialized, not to my liking. But I still love the metals and do most of my work primarily through the X page now in YouTube.
Excellent.
Pretty good 40 years in that time.
Yeah, indeed. That's a great catch. So it was sports, it was everything, and I love it. What don't we all enjoy about a bit of sport? And now you're kind of gold, silver, and miners. What is your take of where we are macroeconomically, and why is gold and the metals and miners potentially probably one of the most interesting things, and we're at the footwells of that mountain? What's your take on that?
So at the end of 2021, I made a decision that I shared with our planning group, and anybody wanted to listen, few did, but I said that for the next 3 years, minimally, gold was going to outperform both stocks and bonds. It was hard enough for people to imagine that it would outperform the stock market, but to be better than bonds was just hard for them to accept. And as you and I speak today, it has. It's outperformed both of them and by a significant amount. And then at the beginning of this year, I reiterated again for just 2024 that gold would perform better. I think what we have to ask, you and I have been involved in a lot, but let's remember that about 98 or 99% of the public investing public, at least here in the U.S., has no interest or real serious ownership of metals. Wall Street has treated gold like kryptonite, and they're the Lex Luger to the us gold supermen. They do not want any part of it. But to understand how to see gold move 40% in a year, if you understand the dynamics how the gold market works, it's not because you and I and retail people have been buying gold. It's moved because of a massive change underway in the world being perceived by powerful people, and gold's going to play a role in it. That's the easiest and simplest way to describe a much bigger story in my mind.
100%. The big banks, the central banks are driving it. It's the big money that's driving it. And in actual fact, I wish it was retail that was wailing in. But in actual fact, most of them, as you already say, are almost out of it. There used to be that minimum of 5% in a portfolio, and then it just became 60-40, and never mind insurance. And we could just financialize everything, and we had this bond bull market where rates only ever really meaningfully went down. There were rallies and dips, but essentially always lower lows, lower highs, until the year 2020. It's our opinion that that debt market has now turned, and that we're actually going to have the exact opposite, and it's less likely to be in an orderly fashion like the 40-year bull market. What's your take on the counterparty? Because to me, the gold, the turbo juice behind gold is probably going to be the failure of the asset class in, of debt. Do you agree?
Well, I'll first start with something you said, very interesting, how gold has not been made part of a portfolio. I have, through today, sat with our new prospective financial planning clients and tell them, listen, I want you to buy some gold, but I want you to hope it doesn't go up. And for instance, they all do the same thing. They basically look like a dog when it's a little strange. They click their head and go, why do you want me to buy something that you think is not going to go up? And my answer to them always is, because if it does, what you're showing me, what you're overloaded here in your portfolio, is likely to go down. And so I always said, no matter what the feeling was, you own gold minimally, as you said, as part of a portfolio, a hedging, insurance, et cetera. But what's transpired, if you think about it, it really wasn't in the best interest for banks to buy a lot of gold, simply because they have lived off financial assets their entire lives. And so for them to have made this decision and to do it in such a big way clearly was recognized by them. And of course, they would know it before most others, that there's a huge change coming. Now, part of that is being driven by the BRICS. I've been a big advocate of the BRICS. And I like to tell this story, friends. I hope you don't mind. I spoke not too long ago to about 30 or 40 financial advisors. And clearly, most of them were under 40. And I think a lot of them were under 30 years old. And when they was noted by the introducing person that I was going to be speaking about the BRICS after lunch, two of the young kids that were sitting next to me said, are you going to be talking about the housing industry? They had no idea what BRICS even stands for or what it means. And yet it's probably one of the biggest things that's happening, I've said, when it's all said and done, and it's still 3 to 5 years away before they reach their maximum, that it's going to rival the Industrial Revolution on what happened with world trade. And yet most people here in the United States, especially among the financial community, scoffs at it as if it doesn't exist. And so my comment to those same young people in my talk was, well, let me ask you this. Let's just say it's not 100 or 150 countries, which some of us think it's going to be. Let's just say it's 40 or 50 that are now saying it. That's 40 or 50 countries that used to deal with the United States, that used to be involved in its dollar, which used to be involved in its banking system, and now is purposely not going to be. How is that beneficial for investors in the U.S.? And they all give you the old Jackie Gleason, they can't respond to it. So I think there's been a series of things, but I believe the BRICS movement has played a big role in what's helped gold move to where it's gone.
And also don't recycle all their trade surpluses into U.S. debt in a bull market where it broadly, at least at a capital level, it was appreciating and also giving a decent return. Eventually, we used very low rates where the return was well negligible. And now I feel that that capital appreciation is gone and it's only one way. And I feel it's also more abruptly so, that it's not something that ends slowly. It's going to be violent. But many people think the central banks dictate rates. And it's what's funny is more recently, I've heard a couple of central bankers, not so specifically the Fed, but Bailey of the Bank of England, saying, well, we could have cut, the market is weak, retail and consumers not that great, all the criteria, but we weren't sure the market would be happy to accept it. And that's actually him saying, that we spoke to the banks that are going to be primary dealers in that, and they say we don't want to hold it at that yield and at those prices. It'll have to be a lot cheaper, yielding a lot more. And that's the feedback. He's almost saying the quiet but aloud to people who can interpret central banker speak. And the debt collapse, surely that devaluation is the turbo juice for the reserve asset, because we're talking about alternative money systems. One is multi-millennial and proven and doesn't have T-bill accounts, and the other is a fiat debt failing system. Do you see it that way as well, that with the deflation of debt market, it's almost going to be an accelerant to gold's progress?
Oh, there's no question about it. I always find it interesting, and I wasn't the originator of this thought, excuse me, but the timing of the Bank of International Settlements moving gold up to a tier one investment, the rival stocks, why would you do that just for the sake of doing it? Because you prepared and saw the inevitable coming. And to follow that up, when you think about 20 years ago, I go back almost 40 years being involved in gold, and there was a period of time when central banks were the biggest net sellers of gold. Here, coincidentally, at that time is when the real switch is coming. What's not talked about, and this is very critical too in this whole bigger picture, if you're a gold bull like I believe you and I are, not only do we see the central banks become major buyers, but we saw a great repatriation of gold from the U.S. to 33 different countries that once had the U.S. hold it. Why did they suddenly want their gold back? Because I think they recognized what role was going to have to play in the inevitable bust that you speak of, and I concur is a very strong possibility, and no one is really talking about it. You know, I have to tell you this. I don't really watch the financial networks anymore. Most of my comes from my computer. But it just happened to be the other day, and I turned it on, and I heard a word I haven't heard in quite a while. Bond vigilantes. That there's a belief now that the U.S. got way overdone on this speculation of much lower interest rates. The Fed's going to ease. The bond market's going to rally. And sure enough, interest rates are coming back pretty hard high, even though the Fed supposedly just a few weeks ago signaled a big change and we pretty well passed all the fears of everything. And I think that cut is going to come back to bite them. And I also believe that cut was done partly politically. That's just a personal opinion of mine, because Powell is no fan of Trump. But what you present, what you just spoke about, Francis, is very, very important. People don't understand. I sit with potential new clients, and I say, do you understand that we now have almost $36 trillion in debt, hard debt? This isn't something you can just write off. It's owed. It's a key part of our life. And do you know our Congressional Budget Office, really the last place where there's some balance of power, not all one-sided, says we're going to be $54 trillion in less than 10 years. So I tell everybody, look, if there's $50 trillion in debt and interest rates are just 5%, that's $2.5 trillion in the yearly interest we're going to owe. The best this country ever did was just under $5 trillion in income. So at that rate, we would spend almost half our money just to pay the interest that the government owes. How do you expect the government to operate as you are accustomed to it, paying for Medicare, Social Security, and all the other stuff, when half the money's going out for interest? And no one can give me an answer. They just go, well, that's down the road. It's not down the road. Most people watching this, Francis, are going to be alive when that time comes. It's no longer yonder waits, but we don't have to worry about it. That's just one of the many reasons why, you know, I still, even this past Sunday, wrote why I'm still a strong advocate for the metals.
I love that. There were so many lovely points you made. The first point with the repatriation of gold is once again highlighting the sort of street rule of possession being 9/10 of the law. You better have it under your own eyes rather than under and being hypothecated to other people, because you have no control over how it's being utilized. And you made that point very well. And so many countries, and the big holders are, of course, the US, London, and to some degree, the Swiss. But they will be seeing massive outflows, I would have imagined, to European and all the requesting nations back. And of course, we had that Germany incident where the Germans publicly asked for theirs back. And I think it took 7 years to actually get them made whole. And the Dutch quietly asked and got theirs, you know, a little quicker after Ukraine occurred, which also seemed to have forfeited their gold. Let's not forget, part of the invasion and the wars of the military-industrial complex was Libya lost its gold, Ukraine has lost its gold, and it's all fallen under the auspices of the Western hands, whilst others are requesting it back. So I do feel that physically there's probably been a lot more gold movement. I've seen, you know, soldiers sitting on gold bars that belong to Afghanistan and Iraq. So it's fascinating how the decks are shuffling now that the trust is going out of the nation state in terms of gold holding, and everybody wants to be holding their own balance sheet in their grubby little mitts. So I certainly appreciated and loved that key point you made. What goes with a debt-based crisis? Because I always sound like I'm trying to be a black-pilled doom speaker. And I'm actually saying there's great opportunities, funny enough, for those that position well. You can't have a major crisis and calamity. The Chinese sign for crisis is actually means opportunity as well. You know, I'm a big believer in that. But it's kind of hard for Western nations to see the blue sky in this. And how far should people go if you're in the West? We're an English language channel, and most of our nations are Commonwealth, US, Australia, UK, Europe. But I can't help but feel that for that geography generally, it's going to be a dark, bitter, a dry white season. Let's leave it like that. What should people do? Or do you agree, first of all, and how do you cushion yourself from those eventualities?
So, Francis, I engage my Catholic Christian faith right into my work. And for some people, that's a big turnoff, and I understand that, but it's important that people understand that. And the reason I bring that up is, in the book that Christians believe in, the Holy Bible, there isn't one positive verse about debt. In fact, everything about it is a warning. And and the interesting thing about that book in itself is there's more about matters of finance than there is what you think the ultimate topics would be, is heaven or hell. So I value that advice very positively. I have watched a country like mine literally become totally dependent on debt. I mean, literally, most families that come in to see us, and including the business people, and when I dealt with professional athletes, are living at least one lifestyle above, if not more, than their actually financial support. Everybody says, how do they do that? Well, they mortgage, they have car loans, they don't put money towards retirement. They use that to live their lifestyle now, and then suddenly they out, and they're going to expect the government to come in and support them. And here in the U.S., and I can only address the U.S., not only do we have a federal crisis of debt, but most of our states, 37 of them, run serious budget deficits, have greatly underfunded pensions. They're state workers and all that think they're going to get money in retirement, that right now they're not going to get it unless there's a miracle. And then, of course, we have a youth. I would say that we've never spoken until today, but I suspect you and I didn't have credit cards when we were 18 or 19 or 20. And now kids get them, you know, right into school, and they learn that they can, you know, spend the money. Many times parents are at least half smart and give them only a debit card, so they can only spend what they put away. But everything has become a life of credit and borrowing. You know, what really changed, Francis, in the simplest terms, is our parents would ask, can we afford it? Young parents now ask, can we make the payments? That's the change that has happened. True. Probably not just here in the United States.
True. I mean, I do think America is slightly extreme on that, but I don't think Europe's significantly better. We've watched, you know, stoic Germans and Brits. There's been, you know, there was... are seeing it in cars, particularly anything that shows status. You know, people want to look rich, and they're usually not, and they're living, as you say, ahead. And it's about the payment. They don't even understand what they're paying and the cost that has on them. And this, one of the theories of a debt collapse, one of the immediate consequences of a debt collapse, is a major spike in interest rates, because it's a seesaw. And what many people fail to understand conceptually, if that occurs, is that matters are taken out of the central bank's hands, markets control rates, they spike immensely. And in case people think that never happened, well, ask the British. They did two rate hikes in the same day. And that wasn't because they changed their mind, that was they had a bad cucumber sandwich. That was because the pound kept collapsing. It wasn't enough. And that was, of course, the Black Monday Soros events, when people called time on their peg to the Deutsche Mark for the EU. It was then called the Euro to Monetary Zone. But anyway, and I see that coming, but on a far larger scale. And unfortunately, I see the hands of something like Vanguard, BlackRock, being there to buy at the depths of a low, and other hedge funds, vulture hedge funds, off people that have unable to make their new payments on super high rates. So borrowing is the controlled demolition potentially of your personal finances, even if you're okay right now, for many people. And I think outside of homes where you have it fixed, talk to the threat, I suppose. Here comes a question that I'm getting to. Talk to the threat for an individual, because we're trying to preserve people from getting devastated.
Yeah, so my motto, what I spend a lot of time on, away when I'm not talking about metals and mining shares and things in our planning group, is that less is more. That's kind of the overall theme, the sign that would hang over our door. And we try to explain to people about being cash flow positive, that you can't spend more than you take in. And to have little or no debt, given if the scenario would happen, and be less dependent on government, not more dependent, because that's what's going to happen. The people that are mostly caught on the wrong side are going to demand that somehow the government fix it, and fix it right away. And they won't be in that position to do it, because they themselves are so indebted themselves. The United States couldn't get away with now suddenly another crisis and take $5 or $7 or $8 trillion and put it out there. Now we're seeing a problem now, even in recent days. One of the reasons the interest rate is picked up down here, which isn't being spoken about in our major financial networks, but among the community on the internet, is that we saw our government increase spending $500 billion in 3 weeks. It was the single biggest increase in a deficit in such a short period of time. And what happened is, people are getting to say, is a lot of the funding now is becoming self-funding. The Fed is basically going to have to monetize this, because we don't have the huge buyers that we used to have. China is no longer a major buyer of our debt, and some other key country, Russia, whatever the case may be. And that's going to become less and less. So it's going to be much harder to keep financing these deficits. That's what people don't seem to understand. And when you have a party here, and both parties have no intention or nothing in their platform that talks about bringing that under control. And as great as even Trump is now saying, hey, listen, I'm going to let police not pay taxes. I'm going to have this people. Biden is forgiving student loans. All this is money that would have been coming in that the government needs, because it spends more than it takes in. And now we're even lessening the amount of money that's coming in. And so those of us who are left, the working stiff, so to speak, are only going to be taxed more and more. Let me just say this. It's not going to win them points when the Democrats brought up about unrealized capital gains. But governments are going to have to resort to much more hardened tax policies in order to keep funding these deficits. And one of the areas in the United States that's eventually going to be approached is our insurance industry, which right now, when you buy whole life insurance, all this money passes tax-free to the next generation, and the government's going to go, man, there's hundreds of billions of dollars in tax dollars there. That's going to be the next target. It's still a few years away. It's not happening tomorrow. But you're right. I don't think most people are prepared for that kind of situation, but I think the way you do it is you get your own house in order first. You spend less than you take in. You reduce or don't have any debts. Don't pay off your mortgages. Live. The peace of mind that I get from people that tell me that have done that is bigger than anything they say, that any gift that they could attribute themselves to a car. Give you an example. We had a family in the other day. You'd appreciate this, no matter where you are in the world. And the difference on what they were spending and what their income was these four very fancy cars that were out in their driveway, their two kids, grown kids, and the mother and father. And I said to them, if you get rid of those and just have cars that you can pay outright for, you could bring down where your income now would be more than your spending. And I would thought that the two young kids were going to kick up because they had nice new Mercedes out there. But it was the wife that had a brand new Lexus says, I'm not giving up my Lexus. And that's the mentality that's out there. And it's hard to get over because it's a generation now that has grown up as debt is a way of life. So it's going to be a huge, huge challenge. And it's not going to be something that's fixed in a short period of time. If and when what you says happens, it's going to happen for a generation. It's going to take a generation or more to get through that. It's not something that's going to come and be gone in 6 months or a year.
Yep. I mean, it is a great story. Conspicuous consumption, four cars for, four-person family. It's excessive. And it's living beyond your means. It's okay, I suppose, if you're a millionaire. But, wow. And the problem is, if you don't, you have the option of putting in plop, enforcing a discipline on yourself early, or in the end, you can buy more time and live flagrantly, but in the end, the market will enforce a discipline on you. And I feel that's the analogy, that's the word I'm trying to say, for both the nation, the state, and the consumer, because we actually have indebted of all of them. And the concern when you were talking about states is that notion of, you know, California being America 10 years ahead. It's a very worrying proxy because you've already seen what's happening. And I'm actually using that proxy because we have a large amount of US clients. I love my American clients. They're great, great people. But you're in a trap. And they now have exit taxes in California. If America is California, to leave America, you would have to pay. To say I'm immigrating, to get out of that tax system. And when they've got you trapped, the only thing they can do is tax more. And California is the highest in taxes. It's now got an exit tax. You've got, they're chasing businesses away. It used to be, you know, Silicon Valley is birthed there. It's the supposed place of many a garage-based business gone to unicorn. And that won't ever be the case anymore because all the right kind of people that are leading that entrepreneurial revolution will go where the reward is there and capital gains is different to income tax, not the same or more. And unrealized capital gains that has been discussed is actually a license for theft because you can levy that on any asset. You can create the inflation and everything goes up and then you can put your hand out. It literally is license theft. And I fear there's all these trial balloons and a nation goes through an entire generation to recover from trying communism because actually this is how you try communism again.
Yeah, well,
what's the thing? Yeah.
I have many issues about, and I've written about it a lot, the unrealized capital gains tax. The two issues that I talk about, one is, so here we have what's called a step up. So let's just say a farm or a business has passed through three or four generations. Now they want you to, and there's obviously it's worth more than maybe it was three generations ago. Well, when you used to go about and sell that, you would use the step up. You would use the value of what it is now as your cost. Well, those proposals that were out there, no, you got to go all the way back to the cost of what it was when it was originally purchased. Well, first of all, to find that out would be dramatic. But that would just bankrupt farms and businesses because they will not have that cash readily available to pay something like that. But here's the real issue, how it impacts the stock market. So I buy a stock at a dollar.
I'll jump in just before you go to the stock market analogy. That trap is how you make everyone a forced seller that is a farmer.
Right. Absolutely.
Sorry.
And so now you buy this stock at a dollar in January, and on December 30th, it's $2. Well, you have a choice. If you now hold this into the new year, they're going to want you to pay an unrealized capital gain between the dollar and $2. And you decide, okay, I'm going to do that. January 2nd, the company comes out with bad news, whatever it was, causes the stock to go back to the dollar or maybe even less than you paid. You still got to pay that tax on something that you never even had as a gain. And I don't know how or when, how they're going to work around that in regards to the stock market. I mean, it would be, it would just really cause a, just an undue amount of selling towards end of any year versus having to pay for something that doesn't really, you haven't captured yet. So, but that's what the governments are going to be coming to. And it's not just here in the United States. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a question. If that's not unusual for you.
No, please.
I had a talk the other day, and I said when I entered the business, Germany was the motor. I mean, it was the engine that could, and it carried Europe, and it was just powerful. And now, negative GDP growth, just it's really something that doesn't get talked about. I'm curious. I've said that I don't see how the EU could continue in the manner that it has continued. It'll either be loosely knitted and not anywhere to what it was set out to be, or eventually start to break out. And I think once one country is bold enough to take the step, many of them are going to do that. I'm curious to what your opinion is on the EU.
Everything you think applies to America applies again with Europe. I would say the only difference is they don't have the fall of being the world currency to take. And that's a bad fall because you're on a pedestal. But everything else, I mean, the communism, I'll just show you, this is almost memification for a joke factor. But if I just share this to you, this is capturing the German left at the moment, the speakers at the left wing, the current left wing party. It's almost candid camera of weirdos. You've got a lot of people that are, I would say, gender confused in there and other matters. I mean, it is a pantomime of weirdness. This has a Weimar ring to it, if you're talking about Germany. Berlin before the, you know, before the collapse of the currency. And I would say, ironically, there's a lot of parallels for the entire world there, because it seems we've got a sort of cultural Marxism at the same time as setting the template for economic Marxism to return. It seems you get the whole wedge when you go that route, you know. You get the weirdness, you get the inversion, perversion, as I call it, and you get the economic policies as well and the effect on the financial markets. Germany was absolutely the engine. And they participated by participating with America against Russia. You've actually seen them split their own face with the gas pipeline that was sabotaged. And that was an act of terrorism, and it was sabotage because they've lost their cheap energy. And you have major behemoths of industry that now have extremely high cost energy that are now seeing companies like VW, with an incredible portfolio of brands and quite a lot of enviable products, be discussed in a bankruptcy context. You have BMW and Mercedes trading below book value. And this is all on account of cost. Socialism, cost, geopolitics, bad moves, supporting your primary energy provider, is supporting terrorism on them when you are the biggest inputs of that energy. So I have to say, I mean, Germany is I tell the same things I say to Americans, I would say to Germans. In fact, my message is the same for the Western world. I actually personally feel, and it's sometimes unpopular and a bit, I'd shake people up. And it's only because I've done it myself and it's a beautiful world. But I'm of the view you almost have to leave. And then what tends to happen is people say, no, I'm going to stay and fight because they don't think they want to be able to made to leave. And I say, these are different kinds of weapons. You know, it's not me coming with a gun trying to invade your farm that you can shoot back. This is a creeping cancer. And it's on every doorstep, and they are using the laws. They are using everything. There's a massive difference between morality and legality. And unfortunately, I think you can step out of experiencing the plummet into Marxism and taxation and extraction till everybody's quality of life has been reduced. You need to go to another place where it's going. And I'll remind Americans and Germans, for that matter, and everyone else, Americans are an immigrant nation. You left once before. You're made up of Irish, Italian, Poles, and everything. Because you said it's a bad deal, this potato famine under the crown of Britain. I think there's a better place for me. I will go where I'm served better. And America was that place. The question is it still? And to me, it is not. It's now the place to run from. And you've got to be careful what you fight for. Even if I felt there was a chance you'd win, it could be a very pyrrhic victory. And it's sad because I'm pretty sure you're not planning on leaving. It's a beautiful country and all of that. But I do challenge people with that discussion. You have to think the unthinkable.
Well, I'll just tell you, I married an Irish girl 40-something years ago in Ireland. I don't have any Irish. And I always had in the back of my mind, because I was able to become a citizen, if America goes really bad, I'll go to Ireland. Well, after just visiting Ireland and seeing what's happened there, that is off the list now as a place to run to.
The irony is the places we used to look down on, and I don't think you ever look down on a nation. I'd never say that. You're not that kind of man. But the places where we thought we were in a better relative standard of living are actually making better decisions now. And it's more about the trend. If you've got years left in your life, and anything more than a decade, I would say, it's worth thinking about the move, especially if you've still got young children. What are you going to see to them? And I think the trends in places like Malaysia, Indonesia, Bali, entrepreneurship, real dealing, sound money, I see the axis of the world shifting. We're getting a shift of the poles. And I'm afraid it follows the gold. And it was Kissinger who said the gold is moving from the west to the east. And on that point, and I don't know if you're familiar, I'm sure you are actually very plugged in, that they did three gold charts once just on the trading on the Western time zone and the Eastern time zone, and then the general gold chart all time zones. And what you would have seen is that it was an absolute downward hockey stick on the Western time zones from when London opened through to the US. And then you have the average gold chart, which is doing this, and more recently that. And then you had the Chinese session, which is literally a multiple of the gold chart. And that's why I love charting. It's the footprints in the sand. The real metal is left, the building. And I think the degree of fraud, what's your opinion on the degree of fraud? Do you think Fort Knox's gold is there? Do you think there's been lots of hypothecation? When people ask for their paper gold, are they going to be able to get their physical delivery? I smell a rat.
Yeah, that was one of my big reasons back in 2021 that I saw the shift that the Asian trading of gold was going to kill what we coined the gold cartel that existed between London and New York. So many of us, I'm not the originator of this, didn't call it the COMEX, we called it the CRIMEX, because we would be endured with these paper attacks at a time when nobody in their right mind would try to sell that much gold all at once like that if they were truly trying to get out of a position versus trying to force something down. And that's basically been killed. Asia has become the dominant force. And as each day goes by, more and more that will be. And again, I think the other thing that's important to think about is one of the reasons the BRICS are able to do what they're doing is what took place in Ukraine. It was one thing to freeze the Russian assets and say, okay, just arbitrarily, we're making this decision, freeze it. But then to take the rightful interest that was deserving of them and give it to their enemies was an absolute poster number one marketing piece for BRICS to other countries to say, how do you say that they're not going to do that to you too? And that's part of this movement of from the West to the East and the more dominance that's going to play a role in. And that's why I think the BRICS are only going to get bigger and better as time goes on. And within 2 to 3 to 4 years tops, people will realize that they now rival or surpass the Western world on many different stages. And that's when the true collapse or the debt thing that you speak of will really take place, when people can't but deny the inevitable. You know, Wall Street has to get, let me just, before we run out of time, this always pisses off financial people in Wall Street and why I don't get invited to their Christmas parties. But I truly believe the majority of people, somewhere between 51% and 99% that work in our financial industry, could be thrown off the top of our Empire State Building. And all the way down, they'll all say the same thing. Hey, so far, so good. Because that's how they act until it's too late. Yeah. And then when they do hit the floor and die, unfortunately, it's too late to do anything. And that's what many financial people work under, these blinders. I call it the don't worry, be happy crowd that works in our industry. they will always see things half positive. And unfortunately, the financial networks, which a couple of them used to be somewhat independent, really just became headquarters for the pom-pom wavers and all the cheerleaders. And so it's very tough for the average working person to get a true both sides of the story right now. And unfortunately, while that's happening, most of them are slipping and losing, not gaining. They're not able to move up the pyramid. They're actually falling down further on the pyramid. And that's just another reason why that those that have the money realize that paper money is not the answer. And that's why there's been, you know, can you think, imagine you've both been involved in it. If you had said to me, as bullish as I was, that gold would rise 40% in a year, not even in a year, 9 months, I would just say, hey, listen, I'm real bullish. There's nobody more bullish than me, but that's a lot to ask. You know, if it goes up 10 or 20%, it's good. If it's moved 40%, and it's what I say to people, and most of the investment community, think about it, the exchange traded funds were selling, they had less and less. Somebody with really big, deep pockets has been buying it and buying it for a much bigger reason than we're thinking of right now. That's my response to the general media that still reaches out occasionally and asks us, what do you think of this? This movement in gold is so big and has so many ramifications that we haven't even begun to see yet.
A very good point. By the way, in February, I was just checking that. We traded as low as 1984, 1984. And now you're at 2730 last time I checked. The other metal that actually had a very interesting, to me, a shoe drop moment was the Friday finish on silver, Peter. I want to show you, I'm going to bring up the chart just so that you can get the advantage. You might not have it in your mind's eye at the moment. Every Friday, late Friday, if you were to get a surge at such a key technical level as the 30s, the 32 price zone, if you were to get a surge like that on a Friday afternoon, there would usually be, and this would be Jim Sinclair and the rest of the guys that used to be all over this, a not-for-profit paper derivative mega volume. You'd usually have, you know, half a year's production sold in the final 15 minutes at the close. That would absolutely slam the silver back down. And the amount of times, and I mean, it was literally the Friday afternoon special. The only way you can make it more inviting is if there was a triple witching options and futures closure occurring last Friday. One of the key things that happened is that candle was allowed to happen. And if I drop that into a lower time frame, we've actually continued today. And I wonder to a degree if they aren't exhausted or realizing or being told they're going to be on hand for the delivery of this, because this is an exceptional break move.
So for most of my career, up until a couple of years ago, when I was heavily involved in the metals and mining, I was not getting Christmas invitations to the Silver Bugs Christmas party, because my comment used to be, well, owning silver versus owning gold is like kissing your sister. It was always second class to me. But I recognized a couple of years ago the dramatic change on the industrial side. And then what was happening with this continuing just dramatic increase in shortage and just clearly a short position that just was getting worse and worse. To the point that about 2 months ago, I literally said I felt silver now could outperform gold. And so it has a lot of space to make up. It has, in a sense, an opportunity to at least get to the number that was made, you know, way back in the hunt days in the 50 or so dollar area and all. But what really was surprising to me, and I didn't know this, Frank, until just a week or two ago, I didn't realize how much more silver is being used in military and industry. So the supply demand scenario, which always kind of was, well, silver was a byproduct, it's produced. I remember miners talking 25 years ago, we just throw it to the side, whatever we can get for it, it's okay. It's now becoming its own critical metal. And so I would not be surprised, and of course, I'm saying what I've said over the last few weeks, that not only are both going to rise, but silver is going to rise more sharply into the end of the year. And you made a very good point. Everybody I talk to that I know that's a big hitter this weekend that sent me emails all said, oh, they're going to kill it Monday. They can't let it. It's going to be one of those crime exit tax. Well, we're in that time frame as you and I are doing this taping. This is when it normally comes up around that 11 o'clock as London starts to shift lower and all. If they can't take it down today, in fact, it finishes up several, 30, 40, 50 cents more. Man, if I think the shorts have a really, really huge problem. We could have it. But remember, we still have the Crimex and the LME that favor the players. They change the rules. They'll increase margin up so much. That we saw that with nickel when basically they rigged it to make up for a guy that was tremendously short. But I think there's so much physical demand now and so much control. And you know what I knew it was? And again, I didn't learn this on my own. I had to hear from somebody that China now is actually buying silver directly from mining companies around the world, just taking it off and not even going through an exchange at all.
If you're a silver miner, you say, I sell it via this cartel that are slamming it every Friday anytime it has a run, or I get my volume off market and tell the guy, sorry, got no physical, hope nobody asks for delivery on the contracts that you're shorting. I would 100% sell mine to China just to help bring about a better price discovery mechanism.
Absolutely, and I think that's been underway and all. So that's why, as I said in the Sunday commentary, I said, listen, there's going to be an eventual correction and consolidation and all. But remember this, in real good bull markets, they're sharp, but they're fast. So if you see that, don't worry about it. It's when it slows down and dribbles, goes down a little, tries to rally, then goes down a little more and all. That's the beginning of a bear market, and we're so far away from that. We are not even halfway through whatever this move is going to be at all, and that's why I think it's still and we'll know that when Wall Street finally does show up. When you do turn on the financial networks and they're giving it more than a 10-second comment, that's probably at a time where we might start to think that maybe it's time to take a little off the top when those type of people are showing up. But until then, I think we're okay.
I'm waiting for big bankruptcies. That's when it starts, a bit of a profit taking, because I think the debt problem, and until people are going to sell too early on this game. If you're an investor in silver and gold, wait till literally you are experiencing the doom of gloom of 2009 and the newspapers read similarly. And it should be on a scale 10x. To possibly 100x of 2009 in terms of names that no longer exist anymore. That's when it's time to, okay, it's safe to take a little bit off. And that's when whatever is the cash of that time, it may still be the same cash, just lots more of it. It may be something else. That's when you can start taking something off. That's my call. I really think this is the big one. Because why I say that is it's case study. We've never had synchronized so many nations. That's the thing of this globalization. The Western cartel is a leper colony of debt, aren't they? And surely it's not just an American phenomenon. You brought up Germany. It's a UK. It's everything. It's Australia. It's New Zealand. It's Canada. They will all have slight unique twists to their trauma. Canada sits on a lot of resources. I think we're going to go back to appreciating resources again. But this is probably going to have to be the biggest bust if it's allowed to run its full course. And I fear that's the introduction of UBI and CBDCs and all of that. Where do you stand on these ominous World Economic Forum initiatives?
Well, it's bigger than me. My philosophy and what's left, I'm well advanced in my career and my mortal life as well. I do think that my focus has been trying to get individuals to get their house in order. I'm never going to be able to influence governments, things of that nature. But I do think we can do a lot on our own.
Yes.
I still see most people not willing. What I've heard in the recent days is this. Oh, yeah, Mr. Granite, you were right about the metals. If they pull back, I'm going to buy that. You never get that pullback, because when the pullback comes, if it does, you go, well, let me see if we can go pull back a little further. And missed it. So I don't expect the public to get on board this. I still believe this is going to be dominated institutional-wise, large investors in the metals market. And the reason I know that also is the one segment that hasn't moved on the mining side are the little juniors, which is predominantly where individuals would normally be in. We've seen great moves in majors. We've seen a great pickup in mergers and acquisitions in mining, but we haven't seen it yet in the small ones because that normally needs public participation that isn't there yet. It'll come because they'll become so unbelievably cheap that the majors will just have to wholesale start buying them up, and that's when the public will jump in. But I my focus is more on a one-to-one basis than trying to fix the whole world. And like I said, my philosophy remains, I've been on this campaign for almost 20 years or half of my career, that less is more. I changed my lifestyle that way. I could go into a bigger home. I could maybe get a nicer car, but it will cost me more. And I've learned that isn't what brings the satisfaction. The peace of mind that I'm not worried about losing my house or losing my car is far more important than trying to have a bigger house that maybe will impress others.
Great stuff. I love that. That's two great bullets. If you were to give your five bullet pan and we take those two as already done, what three other bullets would you give, particularly your fellow Americans, but citizens of the world, English-speaking nations and others? What other three things would you have them do in preparation for what we fear might be coming in the debt markets and the resulting gold and silver?
Well, like immediately you have that positive cash flow. You know, in our planning group, we're involved with cash flow. We think that's the key to business success, not chasing net worth. So making sure you're as efficient and as effective as possible. I think you brought up a good point, which is very hard. I've been on this kick, and whenever I talk to people in California, I say, get out of the People's Republic of California. The problem now is California is no longer alone in that. Few other states are starting to consider some of the harshness here in New Jersey, Illinois, others where they have very troubling fiscal policies. Even the great state of Florida now, which was a great place to run to and was more affordable to live, is becoming quite expensive and all the other stuff. I think the other thing is that it's not how much you're going to make. It's how much you don't lose, which is going to separate you the winners and the losers. And I think right now people have gotten a lifestyle where they have to command extra above average returns that they've gotten used to in this mania that existed in the financial assets, but which is coming to an end. And they're not going to be prepared for it and able to handle it. And then the other thing is, and maybe people don't want to get to point five because it's point one on mine, is that you have to come to a bigger understanding. Is this what it's all about? You know, if all you think of is this is it, and when I take my last breath, that's it, there's nothing else at all, I can see getting very worked up and, you know, all concerned about, you know, safety and all that type of stuff. For me, this is just the beginning of a journey. And if it is, then whatever it takes to get right to the next part of the journey, I focus on.
That's great. Yes, indeed. Remember to live and ask. When you look back on your life, you're going to remember all the great experiences and the moments taken, the family, the dancing in the kitchen with your wife spontaneously, as real gold, not how much cash you had in the bank. That's beautiful. Peter, thank you very much for your time. For people that wish to engage more, please tell us how they can do that.
So I do most of my commentary now on X, and I finally learned to say X and not Twitter, but my X page. I also have a YouTube channel, but there is a blog. But if they were in the U.S. and they were interested in our services, the blog is very important. It explains all the things we do. But if you just want to kind of hear my thoughts and opinions, my X page is the best place to.
And what is it? You're at Peter?
At Peter Granich.
And I'll spell that out. In fact, we'll put it in here just below where I've indicated with my hands. Go and follow an excellent man who's been through all the industries. And I also like that you discussed how you find your peace and how faith, because has played a role for you. This is a big psyop. This is an experience. It's an obstacle course we're going to have to run. And you need the mental fortitude, and you have to draw on that strength and to realize it's not all about you and what you can do for other people. And a belief system, your relationship with God and the religion is also important. And it galvanizes many people to withstand and to continue to serve. And I thank you for your time and serving us today. So, Peter, I look forward to it, and let's do this again sometime.
Thank you very much for your time. God bless you.
God bless you too. Bye for now.
Tired of profit wipeouts and blown accounts from following trade signal groups and other YouTube channels? Looking for a better way to trade, reduce your stress, and minimize your risk? Become a skilled technical analyst and see the charts and markets in a new light using the successfully proven HVF method by Francis Hunt, while being surrounded and supported by a principled, structured, and experienced community. Enjoy a constructive learning environment while practically trading markets, supported by a bespoke platform run through browser and app, specifically designed to teach and engage you whilst learning and growing as the markets move. This is not a Telegram or Slack signal group. All trade ideas are based on a proprietary technical analysis process honed over decades, which is the HVF method, leading to trade ideas with fast-moving breakouts and tight stops, exact entries and exits, nuanced interim considerations, and ultimately, strong rewards. Submissions are graded and scored by Francis for potential high-quality setups, and we provide bespoke tools to help get the job done properly and with precision. Over time and with focused effort, you'll begin to look at charts and price action just like Francis. Community updates every day by Francis and our three webinars a week provide a 360-degree approach, which are presented by our experienced team of trade leaders, to spot potential trades. We're a community of self-actualized individuals, spanning the globe and active 24/7, 365. The premium community provides a warm, supportive, and cooperative place for people willing to listen, participate, contribute, and to learn. We've changed thousands of traders' lives. Transform your approach to trading now. Transform your life. Book an introductory call with us on the link below.